Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Geek Matrix DC Comics Review Show, episode number 174. That is legacy number. Je ne sais quoi. That's Josh's job now. He holds on to that number. He keeps it close to the chest because I can't remember. That's too many numbers. I deal with numbers all day. I can't deal with it. Four extra digits.
Do we put our legacy numbering in the title of each episode? I actually don't know, but if so, I think that would be very.
I'm not sure actually.
Very poignant
Josh,
with the way
writes
comics
down.
Are now.
It would be, yeah. If Josh doesn't, maybe we should convince him to. Yeah. So you've heard him. You've heard his voice. He's back.
I'm back.
He's here.
It's been
Brandon,
3 weeks.
Sound off, my man.
I've been in the dungeon. Hello, everybody. I've been in the dungeon, the proverbial dungeon, for the last 3 weeks. Because I just have had like no chance to basically do anything with free time. It's just been a constant onslaught of things, because 3 weeks ago we had a show to put on, believe it or not, an entire show that basically ate up all of my time. And then following that, the beauty of putting on an entire production is that life doesn't stop for you. So when you finish that, you have a million other things that you have to do. So the next week was just like catching up with work. And then last week was just more of like, oh, here's a couple of things you need to do before you go on break so you don't drown. So yeah, it's been a lot. But it's good to be back. It's nice to see Rob's lovely face once more. And Josh is not with us.
Same to you. You know, he is not
some quality time with his wife, but we don't begrudge him for that.
Oh, hell no. Happy birthday, Holly.
Yes.
And happy Thanksgiving to our American peeps.
Of course.
Brandon, same to you.
I know you guys are weird and celebrate your Thanksgiving earlier, but...
No, we just like to have a break between holidays.
It's not a real Thanksgiving.
No. I mean, y'all got two holidays in November, don't you? Like, Veterans Day, I think, is a national holiday as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Thanksgiving, that's like a proper holiday too, right?
Yeah, but truthfully, those holidays don't really matter, because in the eyes of the American consciousness, we pretty much just skip straight to Christmas right after Halloween is over.
Pretty much. Hell, in some cases, before Halloween is over.
Sometimes. I've been shocked when I walk into like a grocery store or something and they've already got the Christmas trees ready to go. And I'm like,
and it's like October 12th.
We haven't even cleared Halloween yet.
Yeah. But I mean, like, and this is coming from somebody that works retail and does holiday resets. Once, like, you set Halloween at the beginning of September, and that slowly starts to sell through over the next couple of months.
Yeah.
Right. So by the time October hits, around like the midpoint, you have next to no Halloween left, and all the space that's there, needs to be filled with something. So you may as well fill it with Christmas.
Yeah, I guess that is smart. Plus, it probably saves you the hassle of like trying to do last minute Christmas stocking, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Plus, like, people will buy decorations in September if they could, which I don't understand. We get people buying snowblowers at the in October when it's 15 degrees outside.
Oh, God.
I think I sold a snowblower 1 week when we had a heat wave in like late October, and it was like 22 Celsius. Like, what are you doing?
I just have to
Where
assume
are you
like
going?
They're planning for the future. Otherwise, I don't know. I don't know if I want to know.
I mean, that's one thing. I completely understand that, but like, Jesus, like, wait a minute. I just put the box on the floor.
Yeah. Well, if I've learned anything from How I Met Your Mother, it's that summer only lasts for like 2 weeks in Canada, so maybe he was just preparing for the rest of it.
It's actually like summer maybe 2 months. Actually, no, summer, at least where I live, because I'm Southern Ontario, summer's pretty hectic.
Really?
When you're anywhere else, like for me, Southern Ontario summer is like temperature wise is anywhere from like May to August. Like, it's pretty feckin' long.
Wow.
And I'm somebody that prefers the cold, so I can't stand the summer. I'm always paying attention to when it hits 30 degrees Celsius.
Ugh, disgusting.
But, like, our autumn is like 2 weeks. We were hitting like 25 degrees Celsius, we get 2 weeks of 15 degree weather, and then you're like zero.
Yeah,
and it's snow. Like,
that's
I hate
that's
it because I love autumn. Autumn is my favorite season.
Oh yeah.
But no, I don't get it.
I think being on the East Coast, like, I've definitely learned to appreciate autumn and fall a lot more, because it just, in California, like, the leaves hardly change. Even, I mean, to a certain degree, a little bit in Northern California, but it's really just like, it's pathetic in comparison to some of the stuff you'll see on the East Coast. It's just absolutely gorgeous. So
yeah, and your weather's going to be pretty close to what I get as well, because realistically we're not too far from each other.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know what it is today, but when I left yesterday, it was like, I think, low 30s, like dipping into the 20s basically.
Yeah.
And I was like, I am ready to leave.
Think if I remember right, I think that's just below zero Celsius.
Yeah, I don't know. I only speak
for anywhere outside of the U.S.
I only speak freedom temperature. I don't know this metric system. Now, the funny thing is, because a lot of my professors are international, and they just love to bemoan, like, the fact that we're still holding on to this imperial system. It's just like, why? You're the only ones. It's not even that useful anymore. But
yeah, I think we should all just switch to Kelvin.
Oh my god.
Fuck Celsius and Fahrenheit, make Kelvin the universal.
Let's do it.
Yep. It is currently 343 degrees.
Excellent. Yeah.
I don't even know if that's accurate.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I feel like you could just use it to mess with people's heads.
Celsius. Yeah. Zero Celsius to Kelvin. 273 Kelvin.
Oh my god.
For zero Celsius. Which is 32 Fahrenheit.
Okay.
So yeah.
Dang, 200. That's something.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Well, if we're all done chatting about the weather, shall we get into some news for this week?
Yeah, what do you have anything?
I'm sort of hoping you would go first. I don't know. I feel like I haven't really, I haven't really been paying attention to all that much. I'm trying to remember if we talked about anything in our Discord about any upcoming announcements. The only thing that I remember, and I don't know if you guys have already talked about this, but the Dan Jurgens, Mike Perkins Batman miniseries that's taking place in the past, which was like hauntingly exact to what you wanted when we were talking about dream books,
right?
Set in specific eras, which is just like freaky. So I don't know if you wanted to talk about that a little bit, or if you haven't already.
I haven't yet. No, because I think it was just announced this week.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, basically, sorry, I'm just like getting some notes ready. So basically, Brandon posed a question in our Discord. By the way, feel free to subscribe to our Discord. Very low price of $2.99 a month American, $3.99 Canadian. God only knows what it is elsewhere. Exchange rates are a funny thing. So we frequently do what we call the comic question of the day. And Brandon posed one that was, if you could pick, and I might be paraphrasing here, correct me if I'm wrong, if you could pick any character from any time period in comics history to get a reissue, or a new story from that time period, who would it be?
Or what? Yeah, it was that's pretty much it.
We've had World's Finest Batman Superman taking place like when Robin was still Dick Grayson, and Joe Fixit had the miniseries over in Marvel. So we're getting a lot of those, and it's really cool. Yeah. And one of mine was Golden Age Batman, because the Generations Shattered kind of reintroduced me to an idea of Golden Age Batman in a modern world. I thought that's actually a really cool idea. Like, it's the OG Batman without all the family drama and unnecessary darkness, and it's just simple man dresses up as a bat and solves crimes. It's very to the point, and I think it might be a breath of fresh air for the oversaturation of Batman we've had. And then this week, DC announces Dan Shurkin's, one of my favorite writers of all fucking things, which blew me for a loop, writing a Golden Age Batman book. Which I was very fuzzy on the solicitation, right? It was last Friday they announced it.
Something like that, yeah.
Whether it is Dan Jurgens' interpretation retelling of a story that existed, or if he's just saying it, this is one of his most famous cases, but it's an original story.
Mm-hmm. I want to say it's an original. I could be wrong, though.
Yeah.
But I vaguely remember it's like an all new tale set within, you know, the 30s.
Yeah. I hope so. Like, I'm just, my mind is fucking blown. Add on to the fact that Josh totally remembered a Red Hood book that didn't exist and then it got announced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know if you guys already like talked about 2 months too,
later. But I don't think we did.
Okay. Because that was another weird one where
he'd
had a memory. Because I remember seeing a rumor about that. You know, Bleeding Cool ran a couple of articles that the book was coming. But he seemed to have this memory that the book had already come out. And I just, like, I was like, maybe you saw this article and just assumed that it had already happened. And, you know, we didn't talk about it or something, like in some weird time period where Rob and I hadn't joined the show yet. I wasn't really sure. But sure enough, as we're kind of like remembering that weird conversation, that book also gets announced. And I don't have the creative team on hand, but if memory serves me correctly, it's written by Sean Martin Brow,
yes,
with art from Sanford Green, which is perfection. And
the freakiest part is that Josh even had the writer.
Like, well, I mean, it makes sense because Sean Martin Brow had done, you know, that Red Hood story, that was supposed to spin off into the miniseries.
Let's just say we had this whole big discussion about Red Hood, and I don't remember what it is we were talking about, but then Josh was like, yeah, it was that great story from Sean Martinborough about Red Hood.
Yeah.
And like spun off of 51 and 52 out of Outlaws, 6-issue mini. We're like, that never happened.
What? Yeah. Like the only,
can't find anything.
Literally the only,
yeah, about his time in the Hill.
Just a rumor that the book was supposedly going to happen, but, you know, never actually materialized.
Yeah.
And here it was just lurking in the shadows all this time, much like Red Hood himself.
Like, it could, we all know, like, Josh does have some memory problems due to certain things. I won't mention on the podcast for privacy's sake, but so that like, it's very possible that maybe he did read that rumor, read that article, or heard you talk about it and just forgot about that, but that idea was still in his head.
Yeah.
Right. It's like very possible, but like, it was eerily accurate to some stuff.
It was more that he seemed to remember like the series had already been out, which is
remembered like story beats. I think he remembered certain panels and pages. Yeah. Like, that's wild.
It was weirdly intricate to the point. It's like, how could you remember something that detailed that never existed, or at least didn't exist up until now? But I don't actually, we're so unprepared. This is shameful. Yeah.
What are you looking for now?
I just, because I don't really remember the, like what the name of the series was and everything. So I kind of want to pull it up so I can give it its proper.
I think it's just called Red Hood the Hill.
Yes. Yeah. Red Hood the Hill, number one, a 6-issue series written by Sean Martin Brow, with, like, as I said, art from Sanford Green and a couple of variant covers, and as Rob already said, is spinning off of the 2-issue story from the end of the Red Hood series back in 2020, I think that was. I don't remember. Something like that. And then, just for any fans interested in the deep cut, this is also a sequel to the 2000 one shot from Christopher Priest and Sean Martin Brow called Batman the Hill, which I would recommend. I think I liked it a lot a couple of years ago, but I haven't revisited it in a while, and I don't know. I'm worried it may not hold up as well. I just remember I was really into it because it was around the time that he was doing Deathstroke versus Batman, and I was convinced, I had my shortlist ready to go, that he was going to be one of the front runners to take over Batman after Tom King left the book. But that didn't happen, and I think the dream died, and I just kind of let that book fade into obscurity.
Yeah.
And for my next magic trick, I'm going to make that issue appear because I think I have it.
I'm trying to remember that book. Like, I don't remember if I read it or not.
It's kind of obscure. So my guess, probably not. They haven't
Yeah.
done a remaster of the issue, which is surprising because that's like, I'm usually not someone to promote a lot of recoloring, but from my memory of the book, it's really dark and murky,
Right.
just because Sean Margaret has that noir style. And all I could think of was like, God, if they just retouch this, it would be perfect. And then I wave my hands, I do a magic trick, and oh, look, there it is.
Ooh.
Whoa.
That cover does not look. Oh, okay. No,
Yes.
when you were saying like a couple of years ago, I thought
No,
like it came out a couple of years ago, so
this
that's
is
really old.
2000, very
2000.
old.
Okay.
Like set between I think a weird time before all the stuff with No Man's Land, but after Nightfall or something like that.
Right.
Even though it's in 2000 and they had just finished Nightfall, or not Nightfall, No Man's Land. Anyway,
Right.
so yes, this is Red Hood the Hill, the sequel to the sequel. Check it out if you're interested for more Red Hood stuff, or if you have been a long fan of that storyline and want to see it continued.
I have a feeling we will be covering at least the first issue on this
Oh,
podcast.
yeah.
Book volume permitting, of course.
Yes.
Yeah, because some weeks we get just blasted with reading material.
Ugh.
The only other thing I have is we have more casting announcements for Superman Legacy.
Oh, I think I
And
saw one, but I don't know about any others.
one kind of came in under the radar. Like, I don't even remember. I'm looking at the list that's confirmed. I don't remember even seeing this one. So, and just to run down, we have David Corn-Sweat as Superman, Rachel Brosnahan,
Brosnahan?
Brosnahan, thank you, as Lois Lane, Isabella Merced as Hawkgirl, Edie Gathegi as Mr. Terrific, Nathan Fillion as Guy Gardner, Anthony Carrigan as Metamorpho, and then two that came in. Kind of, I never even heard about Skylar Gazondo as Jimmy Olsen and Sarah Sampaio as Eve Tessmacher. Eve Tessmacher is a very interesting choice, but I like it.
Yeah, it seems like they're going for like kind of a classic thing if they're bringing in,
Yeah.
Miss Tessmacher.
And then last week we got a look at the villain of the piece, at least what they're saying is the villain, and it kind of paints a picture for the story that James Gunn wants to set going forward. We have Maria Gabriella de Faria, sorry, Maria Gabriella de Faria as the engineer
Yeah, good old Angela
from
Spicer,
Stormwatch, if I remember right.
the Authority.
The Authority. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So that's again Wildstorm peeking out, and kind of paints a picture as well as why there's so much Wildstorm content coming into DC right now. Because James Gunn did say that he wants the movies and the comics to be a little more connected. So if you have the character on the screen, you will also have the character in the comics, so you can read about the character right away, which is a great idea, I think. And not just like a simple, here's a movie about this character and here's a 4-issue mini about the character in the movie. No, we don't want a movie tie-in. We want like the
Yeah,
character. Right.
but
So
I hope doesn't attempt to like do too much synergy with the movie, because I know the Marvel would kind of do that a little bit too much, where sometimes
yeah.
the movie interpretations of the character would just become the character, which works
Yeah.
sometimes, like, yeah, with Blade, sure, Star-Lord, kind of depends who you ask, but you know, some it's just like, okay,
it's a little extreme.
Yeah, it's just kind of weird.
I will say that they haven't done that so far. Like, the movies have been pretty character accurate. They haven't taken as many liberties, I'll say that. At least in terms of, like, Superman, Henry Cavill Superman was maybe a little darker than you'd get from your typical Superman, but he was pretty accurate. Wonder Woman is accurate. Aquaman is accurate. I haven't seen Blue Beetle, but the trailers, I would say, they got Jaime pretty accurate to the comics. So there wouldn't necessarily need to be many liberties taken in the story. But the Blue Beetle we're getting in the comics right now, I think it's the same Jaime we've always had voice-wise and style-wise. So I think they're going to have a good head on their shoulders about not interchanging it too much. But the last announcement that we had this week is another quote-unquote villain, I will say. Lex Luthor is
confirmed
to be in the movie, being played by Nicholas Holt, who you'd know from many things if you don't recognize the name. He played Beast in the X-Men movies, not Kelsey Grammer, the young Beast, as well as the guy that was shiny and chrome in Mad Max Fury Road, that guy who sprayed the in his mouth. That was Nicholas Holt. And if you watch like the breakaway hit for me from this year, Renfield, he was Renfield. Fucking fantastic also, movie.
Just like the most pretentious guy you ever saw in The Menu, which is like my favorite movie of last year. I still think about that in quite excessive amounts of time. And then I've never seen Skins, but I know he was in that show. It's like a British drama.
Skins.
Have
I seen that? Let me look that up. Is that the one I'm thinking of? No, I have not watched that. I was thinking of something else entirely. Interesting cast.
Yeah.
Dev Patel. Yeah,
it says like all of the recognizable British actors today. Like, yeah, Dev Patel. Oh my god, what's his name? Oh, Daniel Kaluuya, Kaya Scodelario, like just a lot of people you've probably seen in other things. Mm-hmm. They all kind of got their start in Skins. But I've never actually seen an episode, so it might be worth checking out at some point.
Yeah. Might be worth it. All right, so that, as far as I can tell, is all the news we've got fit to talk about.
Sweet.
I don't think there was anything else amazingly pressing in the solicits from last week.
Yeah, I haven't really gotten a chance to go through everything. I just saw some of the major book announcements, but yeah, if you didn't flag anything, I think we're good.
I want to say there was one other thing, but like I was so shocked by Golden Age Batman that I just kind of forgot everything else.
Yeah, no, I understand.
All right, well, I said let's get into some books.
We'll
start off with honorable mentions. I'll be taking over for Josh this week. Hope I do a good job. So we have Titans Beast World Evolution, which is a reprint of various Beast Boy-centric stories, which supposedly lead him into his role in Beast World going forward. Check it out if you want some classic Beast Boy content. I'm sure it is quite good. I didn't check it out because I want Beast World to just be as big a surprise as possible. Harley Quinn, Black, White, and Redder number 5 is as fun as it always is. excuse me, when you get those anthology books, bound to have some fun stories in it. Batman Offworld number 1, I have not had a chance to check this out yet, but I am very excited for it.
It feels like a book from 2005. It's so good. Or at least I had a lot of fun with it. It's like, I don't know, something about like the premise is so simple in its execution that it feels like something from 18 years ago. And yet, I don't know, I was smiling like the biggest loon.
I'm just so taken by the concept of Batman lost in outer space by himself. And not just any Batman, like a younger Batman.
Well, you get a sense of why towards the end of the issue, like why he would, because initially I think some of the previews made it seem like he just kind of was taken off world, you know, out of his out of his own. I don't spoil it too much, but basically you find out that he sort of chose to actually go out of space or out to space. But the why, find out if you actually read the issue.
Right. I got to the first page and I saw a space sector and I was like, oh good, I'm home.
Yeah.
Then we have Hawk Girl number 5. I'll be honest, I'm kind of falling off Hawk Girl, but if you're enjoying it, this issue does seem like it can be a very enjoyable issue for the series. I believe it's the penultimate chapter, so the story will begin to wrap up, and you do get some very interesting moments in this issue, but it, to be honest, just not for me. And we have finally Justice League versus Godzilla versus Kong number 2. Speaking of things that are for me, it's this.
I
love this book. The characters' voices aren't 100% accurate, but it's out of continuity. It's a side story. It's an intercompany crossover. I'm not going to hold it against it. Not many times do the intercompany crossovers get voices 100% accurate. So I'm not going to bash that. Have you read that spinoff yet?
No, I'm saving this for like a rainy day when I don't really have anything else to read. I don't know. It was I've seen some of the pages that people have posted online and like briefly flicked through it at my LCS, but I don't know. I think I'm just going to hold out until it's all done and then I'll read through the whole thing, maybe see how I feel about it. I did read Hawk Girl though. I'm not falling off quite as much. Like I think for some of the book's flaws, and really it's just kind of that the focus is spread a little too thin, where it should just be focused on Kendra. I think the book works for the most part. And I do like that it is very kind of respectful of its history, which is, mm-hmm. is sort of something you have to consider with a book about the Hawks. So.
Right. That's fair. There was, like I said, there was definitely some cool moments in there when I was flipping mm-hmm. through it. And even just going through various historical parts of Hawk Girl's past, you even see Black Girl, Lantern Hawk Girl, which I was very surprised at, but mm-hmm. so like that part was cool. So that is our honorable mentions. Josh, the one that always transfers. I don't know. how do we all right, we'll just jump right into the
main. let's just head into it.
Some things never change, eh, Brandon?
No, unfortunately.
I am horrible at transitions. All right, so we're going to start off with Catwoman number 59. And I'm looking at the wrong list because this still says Josh is doing it. One second, let me find the right list. Oh, what the hell? There it is. Right, this is brought to us by me. So this is Catwoman number 59. Un second, everything seems to be going haywire right now. What the hell? Okay, there we go. This is Catwoman number 59, written by Tini Howard, with art from Stefano Raffaele, colors from Veronica Gandini, and letters from Lucas Scatoni, with an amazing cover from DNA David Nakayama. I'm so happy he's getting a lot of work on covers. It's a gorgeous cover, I gotta say. That classic purple costume. Nice. All right. So we open up in, and just bear with me. I'm tired. I'm not going to be great with the pronunciation today. We're in Colombia. That's all I'm going to say. And Catwoman is tailing somebody. But she's not tailing him to take him down. She's tailing him to save him as he's running away from Paola Molina, the Santa Espada, or Our Lady of the Sword, who is a somewhat crime lord in this city in Colombia, and runs the Egyptian temple there, which attracts many people to come see because it is a beautiful site of historical significance. Mm-hmm. But then she almost kidnaps them and makes them her slaves. Slaves, quote unquote, she'll call them servants, aides, hired help, but if they make a mistake, she just kills them dead. She doesn't fire them. And this woman is also the previous owner of Catwoman's current cat, Duchess, the diamond-backed beautiful little kitty who I just want to pet. I would love to have a cat like that. All right, so Catwoman engages in combat with Santa Espada. While this man gets away, he turns the wrong corner though and ends up in front of a bunch of guards with guns, and he gets gunned down. Catwoman then escapes from Santa Espada, and that is where we jump back to the past, where we see after the events of Gotham War in the crater that was the asteroid. Catwoman's body is still there, and she is found by some homeless woman with a shopping cart full of cats. And she's alive. Somehow she is alive. This woman who is speaking with an odd voice, as you can tell by the text boxes, basically is cementing that Catwoman now has 9 lives, and the asteroid hitting her just spent one. She cannot be fully killed until those 9 lives are spent. And Selina doesn't fully believe it. So the first person she goes to see to try and figure stuff out, as she realizes she has to leave Gotham with this new information, is Eco. Explains everything, and there's these new tattoo-like markings on her back. One of them is filled in black, which insinuates the one life she's already spent coming back to life after the asteroid. She has to leave Gotham to try and figure some stuff out and maybe pull off a few legendary heists that she's never had the lives to really take on, including try and return Duchess. So she's asking Eiko to take over as Catwoman for the time being. And then we
Again.
had the, yeah, again.
Again, again, again,
Which
again.
I'll be honest, I'm all for. Like, I liked Eco as
It's
Catwoman.
I like it, but I feel like it has become almost a trope of this run of Selina leaves the city, Iko takes over for a little bit as Catwoman, then she comes back. And it's just like, how many times are we gonna do this? How many times are we gonna run through this? Like, come on,
I mean,
man.
you need a Catwoman in Gotham.
Yeah, at this point, I'm just like, just let her be Catwoman and you can like moonlight on the side. I don't know. It's
Yeah.
like comical at this point.
All right, so now we're back in Colombia, where Catwoman has kind of invaded the home of Paola Molina, and she is not happy. Catwoman was spotted. There's a wine cellar left open, and the waiter, I guess, servant that left it open because he was going back in just a second, gets gunned down right in front of her. The downside is Catwoman was not even in the wine cellar. But now that she knows that they were there, she goes down into the wine cellar. I think it's the last place they'll look. But there is Santa Espada waiting for her. So they engage in combat and talk about Valmont and how Valmont was once the lover of Santa Espada and how Selina killed him, which enrages Santa Espada because she wanted to be the one to kill him. Because she never lets anybody live, and he is the only one that got away, both in love and in death. So now they fight a little bit harder. At least Santa Espada fights a little bit harder. Now she's enraged, and even kills Catwoman, stabbing her through the heart. But that just spends one of her 9 lives, and she comes back to life. Actually, I believe she died twice, but I forgot where the other death is, because at the end of it all, she keeps Duchess, brings Duchess back to Dario at her apartment in Gotham, and got Santa Espada arrested for all the crimes she commits. So now she is off the streets. Interpol has come and has taken her away. And as we see at the end of the issue, two more black markings have appeared of the 9 markings on Selena's back. So she has spent 3 of her 9 lives. And she figures now is time to take on these very dangerous missions she's collected over the years, heists that she always thought maybe she would die if she attempted. And now she's going to try them. That's the issue. Yeah. Honestly, kind of weird pacing, but I really like it. The art was really good in this issue. I really love the facial expressions. And the combat was very fluid. I really liked seeing that. And the story is interesting, but the idea of the nine lives and Selena coming back to life, and she's surrounded by all these cats that scratch her, and this old woman. It reminds me too much of the Halle Berry Catwoman movie, which
Yeah, I wonder if that's what they're going for.
I really hope it's not the inspiration.
Yeah.
Was not a great movie. Even Halle Berry knows that. She won Razzies and she went to collect.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So as much as I think that's kind of dumb, I do enjoy the idea of her having these lives and what she's doing with them. Is now taking on the dangerous missions that she could never take on before because they were too dangerous. Now she has the ability to do it, and if she does die, she'll just come back to life six more times. So I dig it. I give it a 8.5 out of 10. Hopefully they explain the origin of this a bit better,
yeah.
And maybe it's not dumb as fuck.
Yeah,
but it's just a small part of the. Sorry, it's such a small part of the issue that I'm not gonna like make it take away from the score too much.
Yeah, you're good. No, I don't want to take away from your raving, but I'm not gonna lie to you, man. Most of me reading this issue was obligation. I don't know. I am very much like in the I don't care camp, which I know sounds mean, but I mean it is kind of mean because I don't know. I'm not all that interested in this again. I think it can be neat to have Catwoman on kind of another journey type arc, with a bit of a twist in that, you know, she only has a limited number of lives available to her, even if that plot point is a little hokey. But I'm reading this and like, if I'm reading an issue and I start to ask myself, why do I care about this? It's already failed, for me at least. So I just kind of came away from this like, I'm bored and I don't really want to read this anymore. Also, and I'm sure, I mean, it's been a part of the run, so I won't try and make it like sound like it's a new phenomenon or anything, but I don't know. The art in this issue was like weirdly horny. And I'm not averse to sex or anything. I'm not a Puritan, but like the number of ass shots and like, just like exposed shots and stuff. Like I sound like a Puritan or something, but I don't know. It was like slightly head scratching. That's all.
There was a lot, and it was the first book I read, and I read it on the bus.
Yeah.
And I was like, every time I got to a certain page, I was
looking over your shoulder. Oh my God. Before I left yesterday, I was sitting at the library. I was reading this new book, Somna, from Tula Lote and Becky Cloonan, that I think is out today. And like, it's rare that I'm in a situation like this, but when you're reading a book that like has those kind of like hornier elements and you're like constantly looking over your, because you're like, oh,
yeah,
God. If someone walks in right now or sees me and just gives me the side eye, like I just don't know if I could take it.
Exactly.
Anyway, back to Catwoman. I'm bored. It's fine. The art is again, aside from some questionable moments, is pretty good, but I don't know. I feel like I've lost any kind of interest in this particular arc and really the story as a whole. So I think I'll give this arc one more issue and then I'll let you and Josh have your fun with it. But I gave this one a 7 out of 10.
Fair enough. I'm very curious to see what Josh says about this, because he's been digging this run most of the time.
Yeah.
If I remember right, there's been maybe a couple issues that have been like a bit off for him, but like for the most part, it's been pretty good. Mm-hmm. I do wonder if he has Halle Berry flashbacks with that origin, though.
He might.
I hope not.
Hopefully he has anybody. Forgotten that.
I hope everybody can forget that. Which, I'll be honest, not fair. There are far worse comic book movies out there.
Mm-hmm.
There really are. Speaking
of people who have had troubles with memory in the past.
Yes.
And I hate that I have to even segue like this, but... It's a great time to talk about our next book,
Nightwing.
If you'll permit me, Nightwing. Yes,
go for it.
All right, this
You're
is a
better at it than I
Nightwing.
am.
It was just we walked into the perfect corner for me to segue. But anyway, this is Nightwing number 108, part 3 of The Crew of the Crossed, our fun little pirate romp, written, of course, by Tom Taylor, with art from Stephen Byrne, colors from Adriano Lucas, and letters from, oh my God, I need to write this down. I think it's Wes Abbott, but I forget like every time.
I'm pretty sure it
yes,
is.
Wes Abbott. Okay. So this issue picks up with a betrayal from one of the crew members of Captain Blood's crew, who is working for her brother. Should I call her Captain Blood or B? I don't know. I'm just going to call her Captain Blood because I feel like she's moved beyond the B Bennett identity or whatever.
Well, that's not her name, though.
What?
It's Captain Blood.
No. No. I refuse.
Josh will be listening to this while editing, and he'll just be screaming, "Yes!"
Look. I know it's an umlaut. Okay, like I'm not so much of a barbarian that I can't recognize it. But might I offer the fact that everyone else pronounces it as Blood, and like all of the names around Bloodhaven are puns around blood. So,
who else says Bloodhaven?
I'm gonna pull up a list. I'm gonna pull up a list of people and names and scenes, and I'm gonna send it to you, and that'll be my thesis on the matter.
Oh,
so
God.
maybe that's the way it should be Blue pronounced, Haven. But you know,
but nobody does.
Nobody does it, and they've moved on from that.
Well, me and Josh will always pronounce it Bloodhaven.
Well, you're the same type of people who would pronounce it encyclopedia. So,
do you not?
Encyclopedia.
Oh, well, no, like that AE, I forget the actual term for that symbol. If you, because not an actual letter, I think it's a symbol.
I think it's. Oh God, I remember this from How I Met Your Mother. I think it's a ligature or something like that.
Yeah, it's not necessarily pronounced as A. It is like how we say encyclopedia.
It's not
encyclopedia.
Just,
it's still an E.
I'm not gonna quibble over pronunciations, but anyway, back to Nightwing. So, one of the crew members is caught in the rather traitorous act of attempting to betray the crew. But before he can get kind of anywhere in his sabotage pursuits, he's caught by Nightwing in his glorious pirate costume, exposed chest and all. We get a fun little sequence of him being chased through the boat, even though he realizes it's kind of pointless because it's a boat, it's a confined space, he's going to get caught. But they are able to kind of use him to gain a little bit more information as to find out what Dirk's plans are before he can make his next move. And then B and Dick are sort of catching up on their next plans as they head to the secret pirate haven that will, you know, potentially allow them to plan for their next moves. But before they sort of discuss that further, we get a little bit more of drama between the two, kind of tying up some of the character loose ends of where they left things at the end of the Rick Grayson arc, which, to be honest, I don't really know about because I skipped over a lot of that stuff. But I think I did read 76 where he ends up, you know, leaving her and claims it's for her safety and everything. But that sort of just establishes that wound has not healed and that things are still a little bit tense. But they approach their secret pirate haven with all its sort of niceties and everything. And Dick is sort of amazed at how really kind of impressive it looks and modern in its way, and that it's not like a, you know, like your backwards looking town like Madripoor or oh God, what's that town from Black Lagoon? I can't remember. But anyway, they make their way to the fortress where it houses the home of Captain Blood. But Dick kind of realizes that something is a little off about the whole situation, looks a little shady. And that's when he realizes the whole thing is a trap set by Dirk in his attempt to grab power. And really that this whole thing, this whole betrayal was helped in part by one of the assistants who had helped be earlier when they arrived at the pirate haven. They have their own little conflict, and leads to more violence between the two as Dick is trying to stop Dirk's crew and his men. But Dirk flees into the tower, and B chases after him, though it proves to be rather fatal or futile, as she ends up getting stabbed by Dirk with a broadsword, and then ultimately, before Dick is able to help her, Dirk basically pushes her off of the top of the tower into the water and potentially might leave her for dead. We'll have to see as it concludes in the next issue. I'll only briefly talk about the backup because it's fairly short and just kind of wraps up this little mini story. But basically, this backup, which is written by Michael W. Conrad with art from Serge Acuna and letters from Adriana Lucas, just sort of brings a ending to this weird little story of the person who has been stalking Dick Grayson and has kind of been trying to interrupt his life. And we find out that this person was actually a very old criminal from the 40s, actually, from the 40s run of Detective Comics, one of the first people that Dick took down in his early days as Robin, and that he's been orchestrating this whole revenge plot for years while he'd been stewing in prison. But of course, because he's kind of pathetic, Dick makes quick work of him, ties him up and leaves him for the cops, even though he ends up sacrificing a very lovely date night with Babs. Although it seems to work out fine because they're able to invite the whole family to their place and make up for missing the movie that they had planned to see with a nice little Bat Family movie night. That's pretty much it. As for the main story, it is fine. I'm still like, I don't know. I'm still very much ambivalent towards this whole like pirate story. It's fun, and I think this issue was like, I was able to enjoy it a little bit more, but I'm kind of just like, okay, when are we done with this? When can we get back to Bloodhaven, to what's going on, and stuff that I actually really care about? So it's fine. Yeah. It's okay. I think if you've been enjoying this story so far, you will continue to enjoy this. But for me, I'm kind of just, I feel maybe a little exhausted at this point. I'm kind of just like, okay, I'm waiting for it to end. The backup is fun. It's cute, but entirely non-essential. I think it just is like, if you're looking for a feel-good Nightwing story, this is for you. But it is not at all needed to understand the main story. I gave the whole issue about a 7.5 out of 10. It's fine. You will enjoy it, but I don't know how much you will love it.
I loved it. No, I'm just joking. Well,
now I know how much you'll love it.
I didn't dislike it. I'll be honest about that. Mm-hmm. It is a bit of a weird takeaway from like everything else is going on, like a weird step away from everything else is going on. Mm-hmm. Especially when you look at the checklist for upcoming Titans Beast World crossover mm-hmm. events coming up. Nightwing number 109 is listed in the Beast World tie-in issues, which is the next issue, which is part 3 of the story. So very, very curious how they're going to incorporate all that, unless it's just like Nightwing finishes off his adventures with the pirates and then the seed hits and people start turning into beasts or something shit like that. Who knows? We'll see what happens. This issue, though, I really enjoyed the backup. I thought that was really cool. Those fun little stories are some of my favorites. Mm-hmm. Especially the just throwback to some random ass character from an old issue of Detective Comics. Like that was really cool.
Oh, yeah.
Main story leaves much to be desired so far. I am a huge vocal advocate saying that when it comes to Rick Grayson, B was not just the best part of that whole saga. She was the only good part.
Yeah. So, yeah, maybe.
Yeah. I was happy to see her back and to see more of her story come around and kind of almost come full circle as to you know, the not necessarily sudden, but the unexpected, at least on her part, breakup from Dick, and just all the drama therein, because it always felt a little like left open.
Yeah.
Like open-handed, and it was just, it was, it always felt a little off. So to get this as like closing that chapter properly, I really enjoy. And if she comes back as a recurring side character, I'm not against that either. As a kind of a friend to Nightwing, help out where he needs it to help Bloodhaven. Yeah. So we'll see where the story goes, how it ends up. We still don't really know what it is was in Dick Grayson's lockbox.
Or no, Rick they Grayson's didn't say. Lockbox, so I imagine
we haven't seen we'll that yet.
Out.
Yeah, like that's ultimately what's driving my interest in the story, is finding out what's in that box.
Yeah.
For the whole issue, though, I gave it, again, an 8.5 out of 10. Nothing stellar, but very enjoyable. Much like Catwoman. And now we're going to fly on over to Green Lantern War Journal number 3.
All right.
Yeah. I had the wrong window open. 1 second.
Oh, no.
right. So this is War Journal number 3. Where the hell are the credits? Oh, yeah, there they are. Very tiny. So this is written by Philip Kennedy Johnson with art from Montos and colors from Adriano Lucas with letters from Dave Sharp. Oh, Brandon?
I'm still here. I have to run and get something.
Okay, no worries. All right, so we open up where we left off. John has been infected from the Radiant Dead thanks to Varen, the like now ex Green Lantern, of the new Green Lantern Corps. So John tries to take the fight to Varen, but finds the infection takes a hold of him very, very quickly. As Varen explains, the more he uses his green energy, the more the infection will take over. And as Varen uses his own construct to blow up the bridge, or his new ring power, I guess, new ring constructs, to blow up the bridge that the train they are currently fighting on is on, including the train that John's mother is residing on. John is kind of out of options, but that is when Shepard, from the other universe where the Radiant Dead and Revenant Queen came from, that's when he shows up and makes quick work of Varen, finds John, and they head off together. Shepard saves him. They head off together. Not necessarily. Varen, or not Varen. Shepard takes John to safety. We get a bit of a fever dream from John, where he's running through a jungle and finds a city under attack, with a voice in his head that he somewhat recognizes, and sees nothing but war and grayish purple tentacles attacking the city from the skies. He wakes up in Steelworks, where John Henry finds him and tells him, "You need to rest. Your mother is safe, but we don't know what this infection is doing to you, so we can't let you leave yet." So he heads to the rooftop, instead of trying to find out what's going on with this Radiant Dead. He finds Shepard, who is on the roof waiting for him. And then Shepard is not super impressed with this John after finding out that not only did he quit the Corps, but he's not the same John Stewart that he knows from his own universe. John's infection starts to take a stronger hold of his arm, and that is when Shepard uses his ring to lock them in somewhat of a stasis field where the infection will not affect him. And this is when I feel vindicated and proven right. The voice that was inside Shepard's ring was none other than Kyle Rayner from the other universe, who may or may not have died. We still don't really know, because it was never explicitly shown, but definitely implied that he died and ended up in Shepard's ring. So they have some words back and forth about the infection and how John might be the only one that can stop them, because as the Revenant Queen is here, she is only after John Stewart. She's not after anything else. And if you're going to fight this fight, there's really nobody else that could. You might have to say goodbye to your mother for now. So he does go into her hospital room. Medic, it's that Steelworks.
Yeah.
The room she's in, where she's still unconscious but stable, and has words with her. Very sad about stuff, and it's very, very heartfelt moments. I really like felt that. It was tough. We then head over to the Amazon rainforest, where some armed people are going after a forestry team, but nobody is there, and that's when they are attacked by animals and native tribes people who seem to have been taken over by the Radiant Dead, as well as Varen is there, and he is slowly infecting everything in the Amazon rainforest, and that is where issue ends. This is pretty hype. I'm not gonna lie, I'm digging this issue. This is what, number three?
Yeah.
Six issues for the first arc that we know of. So it does feel like it's taking a while to get to the point we needed to get to, but we're starting to get there. Mm-hmm. And I'm very interested in this story Philip Kennedy Johnson has, spinning out of Action Comics, heading into this whole thing. Like, even beyond the fact that it's Green Lantern, I'm super excited just to see what the hell's up with the Revenant Queen.
Oh, yeah.
And the Radiant Dead, just because he laid those seeds across two other books. I just want to see what the hell is going to happen with this character, with these people. And every new issue of Green Lantern, whether it be War Journal or the main series, we get little hints about the state of the Green Lantern Corps in outer space. And I know every Lantern fan is like piecing those things together. We're like Charlie Kelly in the mailroom of that one episode of Always Sunny. It's Susan, where is she?
Threads.
Yeah. Art Montos, freaking fantastic. Can't complain about this guy in the slightest. Montos is so fucking good. Where's he been all my life?
he just came out of nowhere.
Just crazy. Showed up and just like, yeah, here's art. Take it. And we're like, yes, daddy, please. The only other one thing I want to bring up is Philip Kennedy Johnson has such a good hold on Jon Stewart's family dynamics, and it feels like we never really got those, despite the fact that we had family stories from Jon in the past throughout Kyle's run. Like, they pale in comparison, in my opinion, to what PKJ's got going on. Like, he's got such a firm hold on Jon's family life and just the family dynamic. It's so touching and so good. I can't wait to see more. Plus, after the confirmation we got that it is the Revenant Queen's ring is a Darkstar ring, where does that go? Like, how does that connect? There's definitely some history there between Jon and Darkstars, so where do we go from there? What's the connection? And as many people are theorizing, who is the Revenant Queen really? Is she someone else from John's history that we don't know about yet? Like, is she that universe's version of, say, Cat Matui or Fatality or any number of people? Maybe even his sister. That just came to me. That could be wild.
I'd be interested to see why she just has such a hate on for John.
Yeah. So there's definitely some stuff there. I'm just loving this series. I can't wait to see where the story goes and if it continues after PKJ has told the story he wants to tell. Because I would love to see more of this. Quite honestly, 9 out of 10 for this issue.
Yeah, no, it's I agree with you. It's just really, really strong. Really, really strong character work. And I think artistically, like, again, I don't know where Montes came from, but I'm so glad he's here and drawing this book. He just excels at the constructs, but also like the really intimate character moments. It works so well. I feel like, I don't know. I echo a lot of what you said, but I just had a lot of fun with this one. So I gave it an 8.75 out of 10, like just great stuff. Although it does feel like we have, like I've been enjoying the first two issues, but even even I kind of feel like, okay, now it's where we're really taking off with this issue.
Yeah, like it's been a slow build, but that build was necessary.
Yeah.
Just to world build John's family life and where it's going. Like it almost feels like action wise, almost nothing has happened. But when you think about all the stuff that's happened in the first two issues, we got so much to even just talk about and think about. So really well done. All right, so now we are going to fly on over to use the same transition twice, a different kind of war with Wonder Woman. Brandon's going to fill us in number three.
I will do my best. But yes, this is Wonder Woman, and let me just pull up the credits again. I mean, I know who did it, but I just want to make sure I get
it's Josh's second favorite writer.
This right. Yeah, he's having a jolly old time with this book. the colors, was it Tomo? Let me just make sure. Okay, yes, Wonder Woman number three, written by Tom King, of course, of Kite Man fame, with art from Daniel Semper, colors from Tomo Mori, and letters from Clayton Cowles. This issue is actually pretty straightforward, as it really only focuses on two aspects of our, you know, Amazon's under fire story. The first one is that Wonder Woman rather patiently is trying to arrange a meeting with one Sergeant Steel, but is encountering resistance at many different points. The second one features our kind of first formal introduction to what they're calling the King or Emperor of Colombia, and his secret private estate. But really, this introduction focuses on him and a meeting between one Private Delgado, someone who was in Montana in the previous issue where Wonder Woman had fought off against the army. So we sort of cut back and forth between these two narratives as Wonder Woman is trying to make her way towards Sergeant Steele's office, but is encountering more and more firepower until she finally makes it there. Even though Sergeant Steele is full of bluster and anger and is, you know, telling her of all these things that are going to happen, especially with the arrival of like an elite unit that he has on the way, Diana, in I think quite courageous fashion, really has nothing to fear, given that while he may have an army and all this firepower, she is an Amazon and has her invisible jet. But after the meeting between Sergeant Delgado and this the King of Colombia, who's kind of used this mysterious black rope that we don't have full context for what it does yet, but you sort of get the understanding. I think they might have mentioned it's like some kind of lasso of compulsion or persuasion or something.
It's, like the lasso of lies.
Lasso of lies. And basically uses it to kind of force his own narrative of events onto Private Delgado and basically coax him into suicide, which he will blame on Wonder Woman and the events of that day and the actions that he underwent. But I think the biggest dramatic reveal of the day is that while Wonder Woman is sort of on the hunt for information about this mysterious Amazon Emil, who had caused all the ruckus in Montana, Steel finally, after, you know, basically encountering all this resistance and further demonstrations of power from Wonder Woman, eventually is like, okay, I'll give you information, and reveals that they found a little bit of blood at the scene of the crime in Montana, and were able to trace it to the Amazon, but also reveal that this Amazon was pregnant. Whoa. What does that mean? Oh no. That is where our story ends for the moment. Our backup story really is just the most adorable little team up set in the future between our favorite super sons and Trinity, aka Lizzie, who at this point is still like just a toddler basically, and it's just a fun team up between Damien and Lizzie, as Damien is acting as her babysitter while John runs off to save a dying calf or something. No, I think it's a dam spill or dam leak or something like that. No, just an adorable story where they take down Killer Croc, and we also get a sense of Lizzie's personality and her own power to a certain extent. Is absolutely adorable, and I had a great big smile reading that one. And that one is also written by Tom King with art from Belen Ortega, colors from Alejandro Sanchez, and letters from Clayton Cowles. I really dug this one. This recent relaunch has been getting better for me. The first one, I was still a little kind of on the fence about everything that was going on. But I think the second issue really was like, okay, it feels like we're kind of cooking with gas now. And then this one was just like, it took a lot of the strengths of Tom King's style of writing, where it's, just a very specific situation, but told in a rather interesting way. I think this issue just kind of excelled because the premise is, like I said, very basic. It's just Wonder Woman arrives at the office and is trying to get information about the Amazon, but is encountering more and more resistance. Like, very basic, but I just love the way that it's being told. And the art from Daniel Semper is just incredible. Really just great stuff, especially that double page splash of Wonder Woman with the invisible jet behind her. Just absolutely gorgeous. So, yeah, I enjoyed this one quite a bit, and I gave it an 8.5.
That page where the invisible jet slowly comes up was really cool, because I thought something weird was going on with the art behind Diana's head, because it noticed it was a little wavy in one panel, but like the buildings behind it were wavy in one panel and straight in another. I thought, this is a really weird like mistake in the art, and then I turned the page, I'm like, oh
yeah,
it's the invisible jet. That's really fucking cool. So last couple of issues, I was not the biggest fan of this run so far. And you, myself, and Nathan, like fucking, what, 12 hours ago this morning?
Something like that, yeah.
Had a big discussion about this issue. Nathan has been a fan of it from the get-go. And as you said, you were slowly becoming a fan of it from... as the more issues go on. Myself and Josh have been less fans of it so far. But as I stated this morning, like, there's parts I enjoy. The parts with Diana, I really enjoy. And I think that Tom King has Wonder Woman as a character, her voice, really well done. The voice is perfect, in my opinion. And... just her actions and the combat is really cool. And the slight bit of comedy that you get here and there is maybe a little off-putting for like the tone of the book and the tone Wonder Woman takes in most situations, but it's still fun. Like, I'm not gonna, it's my problem with the whole series is the plot. Where I haven't been the biggest fan of the plot with the government, and thinking it was way too rushed and didn't make a lot of sense. Like, there's one incident in a bar where many people died, and very tragic still, but they jump through so many hoops to say that, okay, this was one Amazonian. That means we need to either excommunicate or exterminate any Amazonian that's on U.S. soil. No questions asked, no ifs, ands, or buts. Get the fuck out or get dead. Like, it just seemed really extreme to me, at least for this day and age. As as you stated this morning, like, it's not the first time in U.S. history when the government has taken extreme turns against certain groups of people, such as the internment camps we saw in World War II, after what was going on with Japan. But like, that's almost 100 years difference, though. So I had issues with that, though. But then we get in this issue the story with the king, and I'm thinking, like, I read a lot of conspiracy theories just for fun. I consider it science fiction to a certain degree, so anybody that's paying attention to stuff like that, especially in the political spectrum right now in the United States, knows that there's a lot of conspiracy theorist nuts and just, in my opinion, fucking crazy people that think that the US is secretly being run by a king deep underground somewhere, maybe in a bunker under the White House, and that this king or this royal family for the United States has been ruling this country for over 200 years. And there's absolutely no reason to believe that. There's no proof or evidence whatsoever. It's completely unfounded, completely out of left field, makes no fucking sense. But as you can see in this issue, it's basically the roots of Tom King's story. Mm-hmm. That he is taking all these different conspiracy theories, putting them into this plot. And if you've already figured it out, just let me spiel for the people that don't know. It's kind of changed my viewpoints on this story so far, where it's not necessarily rushed, it's coercion. It's not all of a sudden, it's almost magic, and it's this grand conspiracy that Tom King is saying, okay, yeah, in this world, let's take it a step further, see where it goes, and sure, yeah, what you're saying is real in a comic book. And in this comic book, we're going to have a hero that's going to stop that and make sure it doesn't fucking happen. So I kind of dig it now. Issue 3 has kind of changed my mind a bit on this series.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. Like this morning when the three of us were talking, I hadn't read issue 3 yet. I actually read it when we stopped talking because I was on the way to work and I figured, okay, I'll read it this morning. So it did change my mind a bit on the series. Like I said, I was already enjoying the bits Tom King had with Diana, and the stuff with the government. I'm still on the fence about it. I'm not 100% in love with it, but it does have a bit more meaning to me now.
Yeah.
That it's not necessarily just some asshole made a choice to kill a bunch of women because of the actions of one rogue person, but because of fucking conspiracy nuts. Like it's because of magic, it's because of coercion, it's because of this lasso of lies. And it's supposed to be the antithesis, if you will, of Wonder Woman, and we'll see where that goes. I do hope the best for this story because I do enjoy Tom King's Wonder Woman, like Diana specifically. So we'll see. Mm-hmm. And the art, just fucking stellar.
Yeah.
Can't knock the art.
No, it really is just incredible.
Yeah. Every panel is something to look at. It's every action page, panel, every action scene with Diana is like, that's a print.
Yeah.
I'll take it. I fucking love it. For now, 8.25 out of 10.
Pretty good.
Yeah. A lot better than the last two scores. Mm-hmm. All right, now we're going on to our last book for the week. This is Superman number 8. Great, another fly on over. This time to Metropolis. This is written by Joshua Williamson with art from Gleb Melnikov and Norm Ratman, David Baldion and Jamal Campbell, but colors from Alejandro Sanchez and Jamal Campbell, letters from Dave Sharp, and the gorgeous cover, again, from Jamal Campbell. Again, an artist that can do no fucking wrong, in my opinion. I know you've had issues with Jamal Campbell in the past, but like...
Superman.
Superman. That's fair, yeah. Like, I still fucking love Far Sector. I can't lie. All right, so we get a brief history on the Chained, whose real name is Sam. That is Sam Stryker. In the past, when he's a little boy, he was given the ability of tactile telekinesis, which at the time was brand new, and it was funded, if not invented / spearheaded by Lex back when he had hair, which is a hint as to how young he was back then. So this Sam Stryker is being explained tactile telekinesis by a doctor, or professor, scientist, whichever, explaining the basics, how if you're in contact with something, you have the ability to move and control it with your mind. But then he theorizes, what if I connect to that object using air molecules? Then I could just make me connected to everything, and I could move things even further, even manipulate reality, so he wouldn't have to touch anything at all, realistically. And then he just does it. He moves a jet from across the room without touching it. So already this kid's just advanced. And you and I are going to have some words after. Because you're as far as I'm concerned, the Superboy analyst for Connor Kent.
Yeah.
The Connor Kent expert on this team. So I definitely want to talk to you about this stuff later. So then we jump to today, where Sam Stryker is talking to Farm and Graft. And they're trying to get him on their side, explaining Lex is the ultimate villain here, and we are here to get revenge on Lex for everything he's ever done. And that is where we get to the credits page. So now Clark and Connor and Kara are helping with debris in Metropolis, where Clark then gets a call from Lex, and he heads on over to ask him some questions. The whole family's there, including Lois, but also Lex's mother and his daughter, both surprises to everybody, including the Kent family. All right, so now Clark is asking questions about who the chain really is, and Lex goes into the details of Sammy Stryker and explaining the science experiments and the tactile telekinesis. But before they can get too deep, Sam Stryker attacks, chaining up Connor and Clark instantly, kills some guards in the most gruesome fashion possible, using his own tactile telekinesis to crush them into balls, and then takes the fight towards Luther, even holding his daughter hostage for a second. But Clark and Connor had come up with a plan where they fly away at high speed. Since they're still chained, they will be dragging Sam Stryker with them. Which gets Lex and family safe away from Sammy Stryker. Didn't take long for Sam to break free of them. And they get into a little bit of a fight again. But that's when Clark is on communications with Lex. And Lex says the only way to beat him is head over to Mercy, and she will give you the keys to the secret weakness that I installed into him, using a mysterious glowing meteorite I found as a young man before I knew what the hell it was. By the way, I'm sorry. So Clark heads over to Supercorp and gets, I'm assuming, a lead-lined suit with kryptonite gloves, as Sam Stryker's weakness is also kryptonite. But Sam Stryker gets a bit of an upper hand on Clark and breaks, or at least cracks open the helmet. So the kryptonite will begin to affect Superman, but he punches Sam Stryker so hard the kryptonite gauntlets shatter and seemingly disappear for the time being. But then Connor sneaks up on Sam Stryker, puts a dome over his head, and as Supercorp, along with Mercy, have set up these devices to put straps all around him, looking like seatbelts, basically confining Sam Stryker back down yet again. Later on, after the beginning to clean up, and Lois is gone to find Clark, and they find him surrounded by kryptonite to the point that he is practically on his deathbed. His own body is glowing green, and it looks like he can barely speak. But in the next issue caption, we get the only thing that can save Superman now is super armor, which isn't that what we have in Action Comics as well.
We're getting two super armors.
You can never have two different super armors. Yeah. I just think really, like it'd be great connecting if it's the same super armor. Yeah. Sorry, what's the third one?
I was gonna say three if you count the parasite like suit that he was wearing in the first arc.
Right. It's gonna be a new suit for Superman in every arc.
Yeah.
Interesting. I wasn't completely in love with this issue. I don't know. I'm just like, Sam Stryker, I find kind of dull as a villain.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole tactile telekinesis, like, Josh and I had a bit of debate on tactile telekinesis and the levels of it. And then their explanation for it, just as much as it's an explanation, feels like a cop out. So I honestly don't know how to feel about that. That's why I really want to hear your thoughts on the whole TTK thing going on, since you read a lot more Connor Kent stories than I did. But art throughout the issue, fantastic. Story, interesting enough. I'm not sure how I feel about Clark being completely kryptonite poisoned. We know he's not going to die because, you know, super armor's coming, but it is a bit of a shattered moment. Fucking 7.75 out of 10 for the issue.
I had a lot of fun with this one, actually. I know Josh was talking about like the actual science behind tactile telekinesis. I don't really know enough about that to speak on it efficiently, so I wasn't really considering whether or not this is accurate. All I can speak to is what I know of the comics, and at least from what I remember of I can't remember which arc that was where they're actually, I'm pretty sure it was like the first maybe eight, nine issues of Superboy, where they actually kind of, because this is after he moves to Hawaii and they're sort of catching you up on his past a little bit with Cadmus and everything. But from what I understand, like, I don't know, is it a little bit of an unnecessary retcon that his tactile telekinesis abilities came from Sammy Stryker? Maybe. I didn't really have a major issue with that, but I can see how it might be unnecessary. I don't really know how you, like, even in a like super science sense, I don't know how you would engineer tactile telekinesis in a human being. So I don't know. I don't really have an answer other than from what I remember of the Kasel Grummet stuff. I don't know that this is necessarily defying any previously established continuity all that much. Now, whether or not it's an addition that people like or not is entirely up to, you know, the reader, but I didn't really have anything against it personally. But no, like I thought it was fun. I kind of agree that I think he's a little underdeveloped, but like also this is the introduction arc. So, I mean, we're still kind of getting to know the character a little bit more. So like, I'm not entirely against, you know, his role right now, but no, I don't know. I was like, okay, he's a villain that is working for the plot right now. I don't really have too much to say about him as of yet, other than I'll just kind of wait and see, where this alliance with, Farmagraft might lead or not lead. But no, I think other than that, like I enjoyed it. And I'm glad that we were able to kind of establish a little bit of the Luther family dynamic. Not a ton, but like you still kind of get a sense that things are frosty between him and Lena. I don't know. I was like, yeah, I hope we get to see more of that dynamic in the future. So I gave it like an 8.5 out of 10. Like I walked away feeling pretty satisfied with the issue, but I didn't have too many notes in terms of things that I was like, oh, this doesn't make sense in terms of continuity, or at least nothing that I remembered off the top of my head. So what exactly were you and Josh debating?
See if I remember, because that was like a month ago. I think the whole idea that Sam Stryker is able to use tactile telekinesis to move like whole buildings without having direct contact with them.
Yeah.
And even if he's like touching the ground, that's too far away for it to really take hold. And like, sure, if he's touching the ground and the ground's connected to the building, like using it like that was one thing. Josh had an issue with that. But then another for it to say like, oh yeah, I have to touch it. Well, I can just connect to myself through the air, the atoms in the air, and connect to anything. Like that's, I feel I can already hear Josh saying that is so dumb.
Yeah,
I'm not 100% sold on it either. Like it feels really fucking weird and a bit of a stretch to say you have a thing called tactile telekinesis where it needs to have contact, and then there's like, nah, fuck you. Fuck your science. I'm just gonna do my own thing. Just call it telekinesis. Like at that point, because by the standards you just set, tactile telekinesis is on the same level as regular telekinesis. And at that point, is that all telekinesis really is? Who knows?
Yeah, I'll have to think about that one a little bit more, but Yeah, I don't know. At least I didn't. I kind of, maybe I have kind of forgotten the difference between how tactile telekinesis was described versus like regular, I don't know, like Jean Grey style telekinesis.
When I looked it up, like the biggest difference, if not the only difference, was you needed to have physical contact.
Yeah.
Right. Which brought into question, this is why I really wanted to talk to you about Superboy Man of Tomorrow number 6. Because they took some liberties with TTK in that one as well. As cool as it was, I was like, this doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
I don't think this is what TTK is.
Yeah, I still haven't even gotten to read that one yet. So,
oh, shit.
Yeah.
Dude. When you finally get to it, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about when you get to the page. It's heavily Dragon Ball Z inspired, but yeah. It's there. Sorry, Dragon Ball Z.
Oh, disgusting.
Did I ever tell you that's in France, that's the theme song, that they actually call it
really?
Dragon Ball Z, and oh, they have boy. That in the theme song.
No wonder the French are so embarrassing. I shouldn't say that. That's my American jingoism.
Your American what?
Jingoism.
Jingoism?
Yeah.
I'm not familiar with that term.
It's like basically just means like super patriotism. Like you are just a staunch believer in national identity of whatever country you're from.
Right. Fair enough. Right. Two bits of news just came across my desk, but I guess we can save that for the bonus show. So be sure to check that out, folks.
Yeah, keep everyone in suspense.
Exactly. That's what I love to do. Even though I personally hate suspense, but screw it, I'm gonna do it anyway.
Yeah, forget it.
Yeah. All right. So I guess that'll take us on to our top three books and favorite moment if you got one.
That it will. At number three, I will probably put Superman number 8. At number two, I would probably put Wonder Woman number 3. But at number one, I got to give it to Green Lantern War Journal. Like, just like you said, it was just a phenomenally well-executed issue and just has some of the best character work with John since, you know, at least Hal and Pals I can think of. I know there was another run that happened last year, but I don't remember anything about it, and I'm not even really sure it happened or if it wasn't just a fever dream of my imagination.
Hey, it was a fever dream of everyone's imagination.
It was a fever dream of our collective imagination.
Yeah.
But
that somehow was getting referenced in current comics as well.
Oh yeah. No, I think my favorite moment of this week, just hands down, I kind of already spoiled it, but is the double page spread of Wonder Woman and the Invisible Jet, which was just like timed perfectly, where it's, you know, she's has this whole speech of like, oh, you know, you have your army and you have all this and all these men with all this training, but I have an invisible jet, and you like flip the page. It's so perfect. Where you flip the page and it's like boom, giant jet, and it was awesome.
Right there.
Yeah.
Is on par with I have an army. I have
oh,
Hulk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hulk comes smashing through the window with an invisible jet. Yeah. So mine is not too similar, but somewhat similar. I'm honestly having trouble with 2 and 3 because so many scores were so similar. Number three, I might just give to Wonder Woman number 3, which surprises even me. But it was in contest with Nightwing, and I've actually enjoyed Wonder Woman number 3 a little bit more than Nightwing 108. Number 2, I put Catwoman number 59, and number 1, again, Green Lantern War Journal number 3, just like yourself. Favorite moment for me will come out of that, where I just felt very vindicated when Blind Kyle showed up in the ring construct, and you got that conversation with the three of them, John and Kyle and Shepard, and John and Kyle having that connection even across the universes. Yeah. So across the multiverse, that was really cool. I like that, and the only fucking Kyle content we're gonna get for the next 6 months,
basically, until until the Kyle Rayner miniseries that I dreamt about a couple of months ago just randomly appears.
Bro, don't even joke. You just made my heart race a little bit. Like,
yeah,
I got super excited when you said that. Like, I've had one, Josh had one, it's your turn, dude.
It was so vivid. Well, the thing is, like, I mean, for it to be really authentic, it would be the two of us writing it, but obviously that's not going to happen with any time
we could
soon.
We could just write it
We could just,
and
yeah,
submit it and
manifest
hope
it.
for the best. Yeah.
But no, it was so, like, I'm telling you, like, the interviews that you see in the back of DC Books now, like the layout and everything, it was exactly like that. And it just, you know, had me and you like feeding off of each other and talking about what the story was going to be about. So yeah, you want to talk about dreaming up like a story with a vivid amount of details. Oh my God. That was crazy.
That would be like the dream you had was like the DC Nation page at the back and we're being interviewed.
We were being interviewed and it was basically just like, you know, talk a little bit about the book. And, you know, you said something like, oh, you know, we used to be old podcast buddies and now we're working together on this book and it's really fun. And I think I said something like, it's really great to bring Kyle, you know, back to Earth and kind of reconnect him with some of his supporting cast from the different runs that he's had in the past. Because I remember one of the details, and this one is still the strongest in my mind, but there's a character from, this is total tangent, but so be it. there's a character from the Judd Winnick run, Terry Berg, I think is his name. And he was a character that I was just like, oh, he was just a really cool part of like Kyle's ensemble. And then he just kind of disappeared. And they never really, and the worst part is there was like a cliffhanger that he had powers of some kind and then just never followed up on it. But I had this in my dream, I just had this like whole vivid plot point that, you know, when Kyle comes back to Earth, he's like one of the first people that he reconnects with. And it's like all these years later. And you know, he's like an adult now. And I don't really remember the extent to which they kind of went off and had their adventures, but I remember that was a really pivotal point, was like, if I'm coming back to Earth, I want to reconnect with the people who were in my life while I was an Earthbound Lantern. So yeah, I don't know. It was so real, but
yeah,
I feel like it's too far fetched to make a reality.
Hey, it can definitely happen one day. I believe. I believe.
Wish. Yeah.
As long as we reconnect Kyle with the biggest villain in his life.
Yeah.
Effigy.
Oh, yeah.
I was curious if somebody was gonna yell at me for that, but like I always thought Effigy was a pretty good villain.
Mm-hmm. Certainly better than
No, I'm thinking, who am I thinking of?
Are you thinking Fatality?
No. Did I get the name wrong? It's been so long. Like, the guy that like kind of copied Kyle's power stole his ring for a while. Or was that Nero?
No, I think you might be right. I think that is Effigy.
It is Effigy. Okay. Yeah. I mean, the name would make sense.
I had to look up that name because I was forgetting. Like, I could vaguely remember what the character looked like, but I just kind of forgotten that name.
Yeah. Like, some people would say it's Effigy. Some people would say it's Parallax. Some people would say it's Major Force. Some people would say it's Refrigerators.
Yeah.
But I think it's Effigy, personally.
Some people would say it's Deadlines.
Yeah. Oh, actually, yeah.
That's the real. Sure. That's the real enemy of Kyle Rayner. It's the cursed Deadline. That is his
biggest enemy.
Trying to get those pages in before it's too late.
Yeah, and too busy dealing with all his fucking girlfriends.
Yeah.
What? Okay, now it's weird that Josh just posts in our chat, I did hear that Kyle will be making a comeback.
Whoa.
What the fuck?
could be more just rumor and speculation, but I suppose we'll see.
That's hilarious. All right, folks. That's our show.
Yeah.
I think we'll call it here. So thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed. Be sure to check out the books that we talked about today, plus many more. How does he know? Josh is being weird right now, man. Yeah. All right. So Josh always says the outro. I don't remember what the hell he says now.
Oh, I don't even know what it is. It's
I
something
forget.
about when you're in the geek matrix, you're not alone. We're just
Yeah.
like, we're just dumb and dumber with this. We just have no handle on it.
I do
Like
the intro, Josh does the outro. That's
the
how this works. But no, okay. So in the Geek Matrix, you are not alone. In the Geek Matrix, you have a home. I know it rhymes.
something like that.
Something
I
like
don't remember.
that. Take the red pill, join us. And be sure to subscribe to our Discord, check out our bonus show for more. And next week, we will see you. Peace.